Can young people be effective in designing and implementing youth programs? This is the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development podcast series. I'm Carrie Rabideau, an Extension educator. This podcast is going to focus on that question and answer why authentically utilizing youth voice while designing and implementing youth programming is critical and how to achieve it. I am joined in this conversation by Karen Baranek and Jan Dardowski, both Extension educators with the Center for Youth Development. Thank you both for being a part of this podcast today.
Absolutely. This will be fun.
Thank you, Carrie, for including us.
So I started this podcast off by asking an important question about youth designing and implementing youth programs. Youth-adult partnerships is one of those concepts that everyone, arguably, wants to achieve and claim to have in their youth development programs. However, we all know that doesn't authentically happen all the time. How do you respond to adults who hold negative stereotypes about the capacity of teenagers and continue to lead rather than guide?
Carrie, that's not uncommon. We do hear that. We work with a lot of volunteers, and actually even some of our youth development colleagues might have that negative stereotype that you referenced. And I think both Karen and I have had numerous experiences working with teens and younger kids where we have been able to include their voice, and really they do impact the direction, both in terms of planning and delivery for programs, I think with a very positive outcome.
I'd love to be able to share an example. I worked with a group of young people as a design team around a performing arts program series. And we knew as a staff that was an interest area for a lot of young people, but we also knew that the program design would be much stronger if we included the young people from the very beginning. And so we incorporated and invited some high schoolers that had some passion and interest area around that topic, knowing that if they enjoyed the topic, they would enjoy working with others to dive deeper into learning about it. And so we had probably about 7 young people and 3 or 4 staff do what we called our design team. So we met for the first time and didn't really have a huge agenda besides how do we provide an opportunity for young people to learn about performing arts. And so we talked about where people may be, how can they connect? And we decided that there's people across the whole state of Minnesota that may have this interest area that may not have the ability to go to a place with the young people's voices, did it on Zoom. They helped choose the topics. When you think of performing arts, we were thinking like on stage stuff. They wanted to learn about makeup and designing of costumes and lighting. And so they were able to give us all these great ideas. And then they also helped us decide like, if we're going to do this on Zoom, what day should we do it? What time of day? That was all youth led and being able to be a very authentic. The other advantage of having those youth on the team is they got to create that sense of belonging for the young people. You know how scary it is to jump on a Zoom call when you are 12 years old? It's terrifying for some of those. So when they hit the connect button, they saw high schoolers, friendly faces, greeting them and playing a song and asking them, do you know what song this is? And just created that sense of belonging within the first 5 seconds of that call. Us as adults could probably do the same thing, but it's not the same as a young person being able to build that experience for them. So I'm super exciting about what the potential can be if you take the time and the humility of putting yourself in a place where they may know and do know just as much about how to design this program as I do as a youth development professional.
What a great example, Karen. You reminded me of something I like to remind myself in my practice is that if this program looks exactly like I, as an adult, think it should have, then I did something wrong. And I love that example of bringing young people together, and you had an idea of what you were going to achieve, but you did not put in place exactly how you were going to get there. Rather, you allowed the youth to come up with those ideas. And what the other thing that I want to pull from your story is you thought they were going to learn one thing and the young people brought up other learning objectives that you would not have thought of. What a great example to kick off this podcast. Jan, talk us through some of the research behind youth-adult partnerships, because clearly in practice, we see that this is important, but how do we know that it's important?
Yeah. So both Karen and I have worked with the University of Minnesota for several years and had the opportunity to work together. We've spent a lot of time looking at Weikert's research around youth program quality. And one of the domains clearly indicates the value and the importance of youth voice and choice as we design programs together. I think both Karen and I have really embraced that piece of the research and really tried to operationalize it. So it's one thing to know it and to read it on a document or a research brief. It's another thing to be able to take it and apply it. And so Karen's story was a beautiful example of that. The research also tells us that the best way to engage young people is to give them multiple opportunities for having their voice heard and choice in decision-making that really matters. So we can ask kids, what color do you want the t-shirt? But as we listened to Karen, they had voice and choice about all elements of that program. The things that really made the program a program. It's important, and the research acknowledges this, that all parties have the opportunity to share ideas and to make those decisions together. And that the contribution, whether it be an adult or a young person, is recognized and valued by all parties. And if those things are in place, adults really can work in partnership with young people.
One of my favorite pieces of research is Hart's Ladder of Youth Participation. And I want to recognize this is decades old, but we keep going back to it because it is grounded in such good research. And it's really thinking about assessing the level of youth voice and youth participation within a program that they're a part of. And so if you think of a ladder as different rungs, and so at the bottom, we have that token where there may only be one or two young people in a group of adults. In my performing arts example I talked about earlier, we had 8 young people with 3 or 4 staff. And so they not only outnumbered us, that means their voices and their ability to share their voices was much stronger. And so our goal is to get all the way up to the top where it's that true, authentic youth and adult partnerships, talking about what Jan said, where every voice is contributed, recognized, valued, and in equal partnership. More recently, I am super proud of a few of the colleagues that I get to work with here at the University of Minnesota. They created what we are calling the 4-H leadership tree and thinking about leadership as ebb and flow, and your leadership may look different in each organization that you're involved with and each program that within that organization.
Carrie, the other piece I'd want to add here, the research clearly tells us that this youth and adult partnerships are important, but there's some other elements that I think need to be present in order for it to really come to life and be effective. One is that within organizations, at the highest level, we have to value youth and adult partnerships and value youth voice. And then adults have to truly believe that there is value in those young people and what they have to contribute. And not just give it lip service. Being able to let go and truly sharing power with young people in decision-making is critically important. And lastly, I'd want to highlight clear goals and a clear understanding of responsibilities. I had a recent situation where I was coaching a leader and she had some older youth that were on a planning call. I challenged them to think about which roles each of these young people could play. And at first, there was a little bit of hesitation. They weren't used to it. And then I came up with some examples. Well, could one of you be the greeter at the meeting? Could you ensure that all young people are greeted? And we agreed upon tasks for the meeting. And everybody knew what they were going to do. They knew what they needed to do to prepare for this. One was going to lead the educational content. And then it came time for the meeting. And all of that went by the wayside. The leader defaulted and fell back into some old patterns. And I watched young people's faces on the screen because this was a Zoom meeting. It takes intentionality in terms of our planning, but then also that same level of intentionality either in practicing or having a script with prompts so that as adults, we truly turn that meeting over to young people for the parts that they're going to lead and facilitate. There's a little bit of letting go that needs to happen and a lot of trust as we do this work authentically.
Your story, Jan, reminds me of another challenge with true, authentic youth-adult partnership is that adults may say, well, I had them lead the meeting. I had them go off and I asked them to make these choices. I, you know, was going to give them the reins and it fell apart. One of the things you said in your story is preparation. You prepared the young people for those roles. You gave them space to practice and ask questions. And even though that adult wasn't able to let them fully take the reins in this story, they were ready.
Absolutely, they were ready. And, you know, all their nonverbals told me they were disappointed, right? They had gotten the courage up to do this and felt good about their contributions, and then didn't have that opportunity. And so as we prepare them, it is important for us to let go.
Another huge factor when we think about creating these opportunities is time. And does it take more time in the beginning to prepare the young people and to work with them and to do some of the design? And I think it depends upon the program. I think to the performing arts one, our design team, in 1 hour, those young people were willing to make decisions that when I am with staff or other adults, we would maybe take 2 or 3 sessions to make some of those decisions. And then during the planning process to prepare for each one of our, it was a series. So each session was a standalone that we prepared the young people for their leadership role within it. So the time is sometimes a challenge and sometimes an asset. The other aspect, as we were talking about different times when we work with young people, is being respectful of their time. So having a 10 o'clock Tuesday morning meeting to plan this design isn't always feasible, but being able to recognize that 8 o'clock on Wednesday night is the perfect time to meet with them, being able to think about truly allowing them to be equal partners in the relationship and acknowledging their time as well as the adults.
Let's sum this up by talking about what happens when young people and adults truly partner.
You know, Karen's just talked about time, and I mentioned the need to let go of some of that control. But it's so important, because when we're able to do that and overcome those challenges, some really amazing things happen for young people. That sense of belonging just blossoms, right? Exponentially, when their voices are a part of this and then they see that come to life. There's an ownership and a sense of pride in this program. And in addition, they're learning some unbelievably valuable life skills. When you think about the notion of being on teams, learning to collaborate, learning how to make decisions together, come to consensus, you know, the confidence and the sense of self that is a product of those kinds of experiences, there's nothing that can touch that for a young person. I think it's just incredibly important that we invest in this and do it well.
So applying some of those to the story I shared in the beginning, the benefits are both to the youth that are on the design team, as Jan had alluded, but also to the young people that are involved, so that they get to see youth in leadership roles and know that that's an option for them as they go about their leadership journey throughout your program.
Well, Karen and Jan, what a great conversation today. You know, you not only shared the research, the reason behind the importance of taking the time for youth and adult partnerships, but the stories that you shared really brought the concept to life. And I really appreciate you bringing your experience and knowledge to this podcast so that we can think about, as youth workers, it is worth the time. And it doesn't have to look exactly like I, as an adult, thought it should look if it is authentically a youth-led program.
Well, Kiri, as always, thanks for including us and giving us the opportunity to share this information.
Always. Love chatting about youth leadership.
Thank you so much. As we conclude this podcast, I want to encourage all of you to go to our website to access more resources at www.extension.umn.edu/youth. There you are going to find both resources and information about upcoming trainings on many topics, including youth adult partnerships, that you can participate in through in-person, online, and web-based platforms. Also, take a look and learn more about our Minnesota 4-H program if you aren't already involved. Jan and Karen, thank you again for joining this podcast. This is Carrie Rabideau from the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development. Please tune in again soon.